But we do run around the pitch, around the watch. So it's the thing, I'm just counting hits. And I'm almost at the point where I can begin to start. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure you've had some water. For those who don't have water in front of them, it may not be correct for me to allow you to do that unless you people who don't take any liquids, because at the door there was some refreshment. We just had an AG's report, so you might be a collective that contribute to wasteful expenditure if you're actually not helping me to do that. So can we welcome the team before us, and we do actually have honorable members, the agenda circulated. Let me actually apologize up front for not starting in time, because we're supposed to start at 9. So we would actually have to look at the entities that are before us today. Welcome all of you. I'm sure we'd actually be able to get you to introduce yourself. But in terms of the agenda before us, let me just check apologies from the Secretariat. So there are no apologies from the committee. And let's actually then look at the adoption of the agenda. There should be an issue of consideration of minutes. I'm not sure if there was an issue we do now or we can do later. Okay. So there's actually a circulated list of minutes to members. I'm sure you actually have the copies before you. If you can actually be able to assist us do that. And then the next part will be the briefing by the IDC. So it's on the 2018-19 annual budget, the first and second quarter. There's actually the second presentation at 11:15 of the NEF, same period that needs to be covered, and we'll be concluding our meeting at just close to 1. We hope that by 1 o'clock we should actually be done. So can I ask that the member consider the agenda as proposed before you, honorable members? Mbuyane.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning. I propose we adopt the agenda.
Okay. What's it?
Morning. Thank you, Chairperson. I second the proposal.
Hoping that there's no objection. If there's no objection, we can actually then proceed. The list of minutes have been actually circulated to members. The ones we have is from the 8th of October, if I can just check if members have got the list of minutes before them. So can we have the 8th of October set? I'll ask that we look at the first page of that copy of minutes, because they're not in order. Can we have the 8th of October as the first one, the 9th of October is the next one, there's October 15, October 16, because I thought they have them in that order, and then there's October 17, and October 22nd, October 29th, 30, and November 5 and 6. So are you winning? Okay, let's start with the October 8 one. Because we did actually circulate them last meeting. So can I check with the members if ever on the first page we comfortable with the record on the October 8 one? Page 1. because the assumption is that you have looked through them. Is there any issue on page 1? No amendment, no correction. On page 2? And we can look at the third page of the minutes. The page that follows is the register signed by those members who attended, and also the apology. Can we then actually ask that you confirm that the minutes has agreed to as true reflection of our meeting on the 8th of October? Member Mulder?
For the adoption of this minutes of Edith W.
Okay. There's a mover for adoption on the 8th October 1. Mbuyane?
I second, Chairperson.
We would actually then pick up the next slot. The assumption is that there's no one who objects. So let's take October 9 on the first page. If there are any corrections, page 1, and then we look at the second page, page 2, 9 October 1, the third page is the register signed by members on the meeting of the 9th of October. Attached. Can we then get members to indicate Mose?
Thank you, Chairperson. I move for adoption of the minutes.
Okay, there's a mover for adoption. Any seconder? If there's no agreement, there won't be any seconder. Okay, Mantasha?
I second you.
Okay. So assumption is that there's no one who objects. Can we actually move to the next set, which is 15th of October? On the first page, if I can ask that if ever there are any corrections, comments, welcome Mudaung Yako, welcome. On page 2 of the minutes, and if ever there are no comments on the second page, we look at page 3. And then page 4 of the minutes of the 15th of October. The register is attached. And one would actually then ask the members if ever they are comfortable that the records before you is agreed to, Hermans?
Hi, Chair. Good morning. I move that the minutes be adopted.
Okay. There's a mover for adoption. Okay. Mwatse?
Seconded, Chair.
Okay. Unless maybe there's other comments, can we then proceed to the next set? 16th of October, the first page. It's consideration on the agenda of the first draft of the budgetary review and recommendation report. On first page, are there any issues? If none, can we look at the second page? The register is on the last page of the record. Then can I just check with members if it's true reflection of our discussion on the 16th of October? If you are in agreement, Motse.
Thank you, Chair. I move for adoption of the minutes.
So there's a mover for adoption.
second the adoption of the minutes.
Thank you very much. Yes.
I think, Chair, we must look at the attendance register stated there. 1607 and the 16 October, which is which we agree.
You see on the register, I think when you actually make an alteration, you should actually initial. So maybe that's what you say, but you can see 15 was 10 to 16. It was written on top of it. So I would actually say that we should actually initial, but from the secretariat, the date was the 16th. And then on the month, or 7th is July. It was October. So we will have that backwards then. Okay. Okay. So I think it might have been someone who was keeping our register. The birthday is in July, so she doesn't want the July to pass. So I think it's correct then to put it in October 17, 16th of October. Can we then move on to the next one? It's...
Chair, I don't have the minutes of the 16th of October.
You don't have 16th of October? Mm-hmm. Okay, let me have to... We just were concluding that, Montesha. Okay, the one of the dates was the 16th of October. It was the month of July which was reflected, which is, should be October on the register. So we want to look at the 17th of October set. So Montesha, if ever we have anything you see as glaringly problematic on the 16th one, you can just have a look and tell us that. 17th October is the next set. If you can actually have a look on the first page, are there any issues? And page 2. We're scanning through like this, Boyan and Montesha, because we sent you this out a few days ago, and we thought, no, it should be easier for to go through. Page 2?
I was not there.
Okay. We're on page 2. Okay, so it feels like I came and just took it away. No, it will be grammar. We may not take too much of time on that, but it's right now. So I didn't take the chair. They just said the chair sat down. No, it's noted. English grammar is always a challenge. But we won't actually take too much of the time of that, but which will be the best arrangement, Hermans? The chair sat down.
No.
Took the chair. Okay. Montesha, Mbuyane and Hermans can actually do that. If I took the chair or I sat down. So there's an issue on the opening of the meeting. I think... So, with the secretary, is it opening the meeting or taking the chair? So, can I just say, whichever we have actually written shouldn't be a big problem, but it does mean that one actually was in the meeting. Can we check on the second page on the 17 October, and then the register? Can we then agree if ever there's any record to amend? But if ever there's none, Mutabu?
I move for adoption of the minutes of the 17th, Chair.
Okay, there's a mover.
conduct.
And there's a second. Can we then look at the next set? Because I don't see any objection. 22 October minutes, first page. So if no comments, can we look at page 2? October in the register. Can we actually then get the members confirming that is true reflection? If not, can you actually indicate where the changes should be? Okay, honorable members, if you're comfortable. When?
Chair, I move for the adoption of the minutes of the 22nd.
Okay. Can we actually ask for secondum, Montasha?
I rise to second, Chairperson.
Okay. Can we look at the next sec, 29th October? So look at the first page. If there are any comments, corrections, page 2 of the minutes. And then the third page. The register is attached. If I can actually get members to indicate if the record is accurate on basis of our discussions. Mbuyane? Yako, you want to say something?
I'm just a little confused, Chair. It says the adjournment, the meeting adjourned at 13:45 until Wednesday, 30th of October. So I don't understand what it means. That the next time we meet.
Meeting adjourned 13:45 until Wednesday 30. And we are actually on the 29th.
Yeah, so does it mean we're to meet again the 30th of October?
Oh, so which means the meeting might have continued.
Until the 30th of October?
Yeah. Yeah. So actually it's I see. Yeah, so the conclusion is that the meeting adjourned at 13:45, and obviously I think the next meeting is on the 30th. What you're saying is that it doesn't have to be the same meeting, 29 and 30.
What you said, that's how it should read. Meeting adjourned at 13:45, full stop. Next meeting would be on the 30th of October, 2019.
I think that's the amendment. Yes, Buyan. So you are agreeing with the last page, the way it's actually. Okay, then you want to make a comment on the first page?
First page, yeah. Mr. Buyan was in attendance and also apologized.
Oh, yeah. So you were a very active member of the committee that day. You actually attended and you apologize. What did you do really, which we must actually record, Mbuyan?
No, the attendance that I was not available.
Okay. So we will actually make amendment. The member was not available. Armand?
All the minutes is written saying when we adjourn until the next day.
Okay.
Yeah, we must just check what the minutes of Wednesday says, if it also gives the next.
Yeah, so I think what was the understanding is that we confirmed the next meeting, but we concluded the meeting. So it looks like all of them conclude the same way. So we'll keep the record like that because it just confirms the next meeting. Yeah. Can we then pick up on the next one? So can we conclude the 29th? There are three mics on, Thrin, your mic is on, Mbuyane, and Hermans.
Oh, sorry.
Okay. So can I get Dawu?
Thanks, Chair. I move for adoption of the minutes with the correction.
Okay. Correction on the attendance apology and the meeting to the next one. Okay. Because it's grammar, can we then proceed to the next one? This is agreed. 29th October is agreed to, Mbuyane? Oh, okay. Mutawung moved. Who's seconding? Okay, Mbuyane?
I second the proposal, Chair.
Okay. Can we then proceed to the next set, which is the 30th? On the first page, if ever there are no issues, second page. And then there is actually a register. Yes, sir.
I move for the adoption of the minutes as tabled.
Okay, so there's mover for adoption.
Seconded, Chair.
Oh, I would say seconded. And then register. So there's actually the part on the 30th, Mbuyane, because there's actually the part, if you look at the 30th one, I think it will be something we may have to check, because in the apologies there's one, but there's actually, the committee was informed that McPherson and Mbuyane and Yako has submitted apologies. And then there's issue, we were removing the present part. Okay. Okay, on the previous one. Okay, can we then take we were on 30. That is fine. Sorted. Okay. So 30th of October is agreed to. We actually go to the last, or is it last one? No. It's going to be 5th, it's 5th November. That's the one I have before me. Can I actually ask that we have a look on the first page, November 5th? Yako?
I don't have the copy, Chair. I only have October.
Oh, for the 5th and the 6th?
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay. All right, can we have a look on the first page, 5th of November? And then on the second page, and then we do actually have a register attached. 5th November committee meeting. Then we can actually check with members if you're comfortable with the record. Motse?
Yes, thank you. I move for adoption of the minutes.
Okay. Then it's seconder. Okay. Jawu?
Thanks, Chair. I second the minutes.
Thank you very much. This is the last one. Yes, seconder was it was Motse and Mutawung seconded. Can we look at the next set, which is the last one is the 6th of November. On the first page.
Sorry, Chair.
Let me hear you. Okay, we are on the 6th November set, first page, 6th November page, yes, Yako?
Yeah, I think my question is, I see in most of the notes, it says, it doesn't really go deeper into the discussion of the meeting, and it says detailed report to be tabled.
Yeah.
So when do we get that detailed report? I don't know if I'm missing something. Does it form part of something?
So the sense is that on request, the report is available. So it's not a point that we automatically distributed that to members. But on the record is saying upon request you should be able to get the copy. There might be things we agree upon as a committee to distribute. You know, on all presentation we send it through. But when there's information and a report, it depends on what's the nature of the report that the committee will say, listen, Chair, can you make sure that in terms of this report, everyone should get. But if ever it's submitted here or it's confirmed as available, members should actually then be able to say, can I get a copy of that report? Yako, maybe make a different suggestion.
Yeah, for me, it doesn't, the paper doesn't mean anything to me. So what I'm trying to understand is, shouldn't there perhaps be either a portal where we can go and view? So shouldn't it say in the minutes a detailed report is tabled on annexure so-and-so, on so-and-so document, so that if I'm able to maybe have time, go peruse exactly what we discussed in detail, because this is not the discussions that took place. It's basically two words of a five-page essay. Am I making sense? It doesn't capture our discussions in essence. So I need to be able to say, well, this was discussed, but actually refer it to a specific annexure or a specific document that is readily available.
Okay, McPherson?
Yeah, I want to agree with the Honourable Yaku. I think that that these do not in even a vague way minute the very intense discussion that was had regarding the National Lotteries Commission. It is not sufficient just to say that the committee engaged. We need to know what the nature of that engagement was. You will recall also that I requested the National Lotteries Commission to provide this committee with the beneficiaries report. That is not captured in here. So, you know, that needs to be in these minutes, or else there will never be a record that I have asked for that document. So I would make a suggestion that the Secretariat go back, look at these minutes, and present them to the committee as they are, because as they are presented now, they're not minutes at all.
Can I just say the record should reflect the discussion and process, and on the basis of the committee's conclusion, like in the minutes, the report on those questions should be accessible. So I think the point which we actually have to agree upon, we record it in a way, we won't put the whole discussion of the report, but it's a reflection that should come through to say these were the kind of issues that were discussed. If it was not capturing that sense, we just have to do that. That discussion took place. The report, when it actually comes back, it should be available and accessible. I think that's the point which one is actually suggesting. And in the one that you're referring to, Honorable McPherson, the report would actually come to us. The committee may have to indicate if they want it to be immediately circulated to all committee members, but Honorable Yako as well, it should be accessible electronically because we do actually have our site as a department and committee where we can be able to get access of all the issues processed through the committee. So I think in terms of management and administration, that's what it means. But on the minutes, I'd like just to maybe be sure that it's properly captured the nature of the discussion and issues that we're trying to look at without going to details to say someone asked this question, this was the answer. But we should have a document written with answers available and accessible. refusal?
I just want to say I'm happy with the way that you've put it, because that actually in the end is the reason why we have Hansard, so you can go back and look at the detailed discussions. But there must be a more accurate capturing of the nature of the discussion, and particularly when members ask for specific documents, that must be captured in the minutes, because we must be able to refer to, say, MacPherson requested X, Herman's requested Y. And if that's not in the minutes, we've got nothing then to reference to. So I'm happy with the way that you've captured it, but I must insist that when members request specific documents emanating out of those discussions, that in itself should be in the minutes.
So can I just say we did ask questions. We won't be able to list all of the questions. We would refer to a document that have questions and answers accessible to the committee. Can we do that? Because it's just the minutes. We want to make sure that it's captured. Mbuyane, you want to comment on the same point?
Yeah, Chairperson, I think you're correct. All of us participated in the meeting, but it cannot be written here, be asked this question. No. Even if Happy was not happy with the decision that was taken in the meeting, but it cannot reflect. What is good here is it indicates that the Commission and also the NLC must provide a written response in terms of what the Honourable has asked. Thank you.
Okay. So I think all of us do have the issue when it comes to capturing the level of detail. On my part, I'm saying if it's properly referenced, then it's in order. And in terms of our minutes, let's actually then have an agreement to say, in the way we have expressed it, we won't miss the issue. In the point of questions and answers, they will be in writing and accessible to the members of the committee. Mantash?
In principle, Chairperson, I want to support Honourable Mbuyane and yourself in what you presented to the committee. Thanks.
Can we then, that is November 6th, right? And that's it. Yeah, I'm just saying in terms of minutes. Yeah. Okay. So fifth, we're looking at 6. That's where the debate is. Okay. So that was adopted already. So can we actually look at 6 because 5 was adopted already? So we actually sorted out the grammar part, and there will be details properly managed and accessible to members. Can we look at the 6th of November before you? And then page 1. And we can look at the second page. And the register of the 6th of November is attached. Can I actually get the mover? Udaw?
I move for adoption of the minister.
There's a mover, seconder.
Thank you, Chair. I second the move.
Thank you, Mose. Emmons?
Chair, I just want to make a general comment. The last few sets of minutes have been properly photocopied. I think we need to be a responsible, environmentally responsible PC and ask that all the minutes be double-sided copied. Only the last few are double-sided. We need to save our fathers.
And on the other side, maybe we actually can agree as well that members would receive their minutes electronically. Then we can actually please go through them so that we don't take too much time in the committee. And then on the basis of our process, it's only me that may have the copies that are solid so that I can sign. Can we then actually, because I do engage with the secretariat a lot with what comes through before it gets to yourselves as well. Can we then conclude the first agenda item? I think maybe for our guests as well, you would be able to see how we're trying to get our records right. And that the minutes of the committee should be accessible in the general public, because we do have a website. And we do actually, what do they call it, WhatsApp? What app?
What?
Oh, it's an app, or APP. It's something accessible right across. So you can be able to actually get a record on how we express the interaction with yourselves as you are here today. But thank you very much for your patience. And I think you were like flies on the wall looking at what's happening in the portfolio committee. Can we then ask that we proceed to the next item? And the next item will be the briefing by the IDC. We are looking at the annual report 18-19. We're also looking at 2019-20, first and second quarter. So can I then request the IDC team to speak to us, introduce themselves, and then be able to take us through the presentation which is circulated to us. Thank you very much. Can I actually then...
Chairperson, honorable members of the committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to make a presentation to yourselves from the Industrial Development Corporation. There are five of us from the IDC in this room. Myself, my name is T.P. Nchocho. I'm the Chief Executive Officer of the IDC. With me to my right is my colleague, Mrs. Nonkululeko Dlamini. She's the Chief Financial Officer of the IDC. And behind us is our colleague, Mr. David Jarvis. David is the Executive Responsible for Strategy at the IDC. And next to her is Ms. Nontokozo Hadebe. She's the head of the Innovation and Strategy Unit at the IDC. And my colleague who runs the Cape Town office, Hanif Bardin, sitting over there, he's based here at our office in Cape Town and runs the Western Cape region. Thank you, Chairperson.
I'm sorry to interrupt. The CEO says he is TP, but goes on to mention the other names of other members. Can he have his name, not the initial?
So, you will feel part of us, like in the minutes when we record you. So they already, there's an instruction that we should give full names.
That's all right, sir.
Welcome, CEO.
It's something that has stuck with me since I was still small. Even at my house, when somebody calls, they don't know if somebody calls my my full name. Anyway, Chairperson, I always say I'm from the Free State, and so when you come from the Free State, you must have two names. One is a Sesotho name, and one is an Afrikaans name. So my name is Tsokolo Petros Nchocho. And I come from a small village called Bolata in the Eastern Free State, in the former homeland of Kwakwa, in Pietrus.
Africans say Pietras.
Yes.
Yeah, Petros.
Thank you, Chair. If you then allow us, Chairperson, to go through the presentation, and we hope we will do so as efficiently as we can, we will share the presentation, myself and the CFO. So just by way of an outline, members, on page 2 of the submission, we will look at the overview of the year past, touching specifically on operational performance, in other words, the development impact outcomes and the financing activities of the IDC. And then the CFO will take us through the financial picture of the organization, and then I will conclude by a kind of a strategic forward-looking perspective. So we do always highlight the environmental context, Chairperson, honorable members, because
this operating environment does have very direct impacts on the operations of the IDC, because the IDC is a lender and an investor in the real economy. So point number one there, when we talk about tendencies around protectionism and geopolitical factors around the world, many of our companies that we have financed and invested in, be it in the steel environment, for instance, or chemicals and pharmaceuticals, a lot of them are global players and indeed are impacted upon by these trade relations that are playing themselves out. We have seen that particularly in the steel environment. The second point about China as a consumer of mainly mineral commodities, we have large exposures in commodities, Chairperson, such as manganese and iron ore, and we are aware through our economic research team that there is a whole industry sort of adjustment that is going on in China, where perhaps some of the major plants that use iron ore might be decommissioned as that economy slows down. The picture is still relatively positive, but I think the long-term prospects, that's where we have question marks regarding, you know, the sustainability of trade volumes into the Chinese market, particularly as it relates to large commodities. Yes, we always worry about, you know, tendencies that happen around the world regarding capital's responses to global markets and so on. But yes, the South African economy at the moment has its interest rates and inflation under control. But we can't help, Chairperson, but to comment on the fiscal constraints that are faced by the state currently. Because again, government is a large spender in the infrastructure space. Many of the industries that the IDC finances either produce steel or cement or other goods that feed into infrastructure development. So if there is a general slowdown in government expenditure, indeed that gets felt generally in the economy and specifically with our client industrial enterprises. Lastly, Chair, just looking and not worrying, but keeping our eye on the rating agencies, the IDC's own rating is still investment grade. However, it is connected to the sovereign rating of South Africa. So if there were to be a downgrade, we believe the implications would largely be around the repricing of our borrowed capital, not necessarily a pullback of the supply of capital. We think we would still be able to secure money from markets, but probably at a more expensive rate. So we are just providing this as contextual information, Chairperson. When we look at last year, the year ended March 2019, in other words, the financial year 2018-19, these are sort of the headline figures, Chairperson, regarding the IDC's investment activities in the economy. Just over 13 billion rand worth of transactions approved, and just over 11.8 billion rand of actual money disbursed. So we might approve a transaction, maybe of 100 million, but in that given year, maybe we disburse partially, maybe half of it, or 70% of it, depending on the nature of the project. And we showed there, Chairperson, at the bottom of the screen, how the money flowed to various categories of stakeholders that the IDC is particularly interested to see advancing. Money, 8.3 billion to companies that have a measure of black economic empowerment, 6 billion rand approved under the Black Industrialist Scheme, which we operate in partnership with the DTI, but also enterprises owned more than 25% by women and young people, and those are the numbers that we advanced during the past financial year,
And in the next slide or so, we will show the comparators year on year. And Chairperson, just a little bit of detail on the funding activities or investment activities. This slide before you, slide 7, simply tracks the historical trends and with regards to approval, showing that progressively from around 2015, the levels of approval has been increasing consistently, but this year that we are reporting on ended March 2019, there was a decline in the volumes of our approvals. And the same was a trend with regards to the actual disbursements paid out. We make a point there, Chairperson, that on average over the past 5 years or so, this Industrial Development Corporation has sort of consistently maintained an average in the order of about 11 billion rand in disbursements to support industrial development in the country and on the continent. This is just a slide, Chairperson, showing the trend in job creation as at the time when we closed the deals. So in other words, once a transaction is approved, and when we sign the financing agreements, be it the loan agreement or the equity subscription agreement, we then, at that point in time, working with the counterparty industrialist, estimate the number of jobs that are either created by such a transaction, or if it is an existing enterprise, we take into consideration the jobs that are saved, because very often indeed, the IDC has performed the role of financing a lot of industrial enterprises which were on the brink of financial difficulties, providing them with renewal finance and providing extended terms and so on in order to maintain industrial capacity and maintain jobs. Just a the slide showing Chairperson, repeating the point I made earlier on that somewhere in the order of about 6 billion rand or so, which was approved under the Black Industrialist Scheme. This is the IDC's portion of the money, part of the money as well coming from a government in the form of grants. The next one is just a little bit of detail on enterprises that were funded, which have more than 25% of women ownership, and we show the Chairperson the trends in funding. It was a good one, this one, because the approval figure was up to 3 billion from 2.2 billion the year before. And here, young people, young entrepreneurs, and the number somewhere in the order of 800 million or so, marginally down from a figure of a billion rand the year before that. So we do keep track of these numbers, Chairperson, in order to have a good picture of how we are progressing in delivering on the mandate of the IDC. This is an interesting slide, Chairperson, because it shows how the total funds that have been approved by the IDC are sort of distributed or dispersed across the entire country on a province-by-province basis. And I think it is fair to observe that, you know, bigger provinces that have stronger economic structures, such as Gauteng and Western Cape, and parts of the Eastern Cape because of the automotive industry there, as well as KZN, these call them economically stronger provinces do still have a tendency to attract a lion's share of the capital that is approved and disbursed by the IDC. But we can talk, because there are all various strategic options and interventions that we are undertaking in, let's call it, less developed provinces, in order to advance economic development in those areas, primarily following a small business development type agenda. This particular slide, Chairperson, is very interesting because On the left-hand side, on the pie chart, it shows that at the top there, the mining sector, mining and metals, accounted for 5.1 billion rand of approvals, and the agro-processing sector just over a billion, and then the chemicals and pharmaceutical sector 3.1 billion. So we just show on a sectoral basis how money has been approved over the past year. And then on the right-hand side, it's a very interesting graph, Chairperson, that shows that a significant portion of the money that the IDC approved went into expansionary type transactions, so growing the industries. Another significant portion going to startup projects, because in our efforts to grow the economy, it is important that we invest, as the IDC, in a manner that grows the size of the pie. So the importance of funding growth and startups. But also we indicate there and show change of ownership financing. So in other words, supporting acquisition finance, and this is largely black economic empowerment type finance where equity ownership is supported. Chairperson, perhaps I will fly through these slides a little bit faster, because this is just a year-on-year comparison showing here that the mining cluster relative to the year before, the figure was still substantial of approvals at 5.1, but down from 8.7 billion the year before. This is just a year-on-year comparison. The same here, Chairperson, it was a good one here, because our financing into the agriculture and agro-processing sector was up marginally from 900 million to just over a billion rand. So we do see this sector as having substantial potential for growth, and it is receiving emphasis from a strategic management perspective in the IDC. The pharmaceutical sector as well, the years before that had seen a little bit of a slowdown, but the past financial year was pleasing, because we managed to lift the levels of approvals in this sector by about 42%. This is the pharmaceutical and chemical industries. Infrastructure, Chairperson, was marginally down. And really, to my point that I mentioned earlier on, and that is that a lot of the infrastructure spend happens on the back of government programs. So if we're talking power or energy, this would be renewable energy or independent power producer type transactions. In the transportation center would be sector would be transactions that relate to rail and ports, particularly sort of PPP type concessions. And we haven't seen much of those over the past couple of years, and I think it shows in the numbers a little bit of a slowdown. But the fact that, you know, the integrated resource plan for energy has been approved in recent weeks, we foresee an upswing in the levels of investment in energy in particular and infrastructure generally over the next coming number of years. Clothing and textile is a sector which is on the recovery path. It is on the mend, and I think the numbers showed a little bit, particularly the levels of our approvals, that more and more money is being advanced from the IDC to a sector which is receiving a lot of government support, a lot of policy initiatives to support maintenance of capacity in this sector, as well as maintenance of employment. We are aware of a pact or a compact that was signed at the President's Infrastructure or Investment Conference, where industry, labor, and government have signed up to a recovery plan for this clothing, textile, and footwear sector. And indeed, the IDC is very much an integral part of that effort. We do finance transactions in the tourism environment, Chairperson, the leisure industry, and we would like to make a point here that from a policy perspective, government is doing its best in terms of enabling greater volumes of arrivals, greater people coming into the South African environment for leisure and tourism purposes. And it is on the back of such demand growth that institutions such as the IDC can then invest in enterprises to build more lodges, increase bed capacity, increase the variety of tourism experience facilities, and so on. And we make two examples there, Chairperson, of a hotel and a lodge that we financed, one in Limpopo and another in the Eastern Cape area, respectively. The new industry section is what we call new industry, really is sort of new tech, 4IR, Internet of Things, digitalization type projects. In other words, that are sort of future oriented in line with the kind of innovations that are happening in the technology space. We allocate somewhere in the order of about half a billion rand per year to projects in that sector, and we provide a lot of what is called risk capital, so sort of equity type investments in order to enable these startup companies to establish themselves in the early phases of their lives. And then this is just a general slide that aggregates all other manufacturing enterprises. Chairperson, if I may move on then to reflect on the major subsidiaries that are owned by the IDC. We always provide some kind of an overview to this committee and other stakeholders regarding the state of play of particularly these three enterprises. The Small Enterprise Funding Agency is a development finance institution specifically for SME, which falls in terms of political supervision under the Department of Small Business. Based on the changes that happened a few years ago, SIFA, Small Enterprise Funding Agency, it is a wholly owned subsidiary of the IDC. So the IDC does appoint a certain number of board members. I think we have an allocation of two or three. And then the Minister of Small Business appoints the rest of the directors on the board. So what is the status of this entity? In the past financial year, they performed well in terms of lending. They are a much smaller organization than the IDC, so their total disbursements were somewhere in the region of about 1.2 billion rand. The only area of worry that we are raising is that the overall performance of this institution has sort of been declining, as characterized by a very high cost structure, high cost to income ratio, as well as impairments, in other words, credit losses that are under uptick. But there have been changes made at the level of the boards recently, and I know that the board there is looking to appoint a CEO on a permanent basis, and we, the Industrial Development Corporation, will be working closely with SIFA to try and address these sustainability issues. My colleague here, the CFO, sits on the board of SIFA as well. So we do have a measure of oversight. Fosco is the big industrial mining and industrial company out in Phalaborwa that produces fertilizers. They mine rock and they process it into fertilizer products and so on. It's a very, very, very old company which was started by the IDC many years ago. Indeed, it has not been performing well at all over the past couple of years. It continues to be a loss-making entity. And so, in recent times, the IDC board made changes to the board of Fosco and introduced new board members there. Two, there is a new chief executive officer who has been appointed there. He's an ex-executive from Sasol who was running the mining division of Sasol. And then thirdly, a new chief financial officer is in the final stages of being approved. I think the person has already been appointed. They are probably assuming duty in the next month or two. Score Metal, Chairperson, maybe some of the members might recall when Anglo-American decided to divest in South Africa's non-mining assets some time ago, the IDC led the process of buying SCOR, which is a steel company, in order to maintain that industrial capacity. Indeed, because of global economic issues, SCOR as an entity has been making losses and going through difficult times, but it employs a lot of people. What has been done over the past year and a half to 2 years is that the company has been completely restructured into three units, one called cast products, one called grinding media, depending on the kind of steel products that they produce, and then the remainder of SCOR. And all these entities, what has been done is that a strategic equity partner has been introduced by the IDC to partner with the IDC in the management of these three entities. So strategic equity partners are important because they bring technical capacity, they also bring capital, financial capital to the project to enhance capitalization. All these companies are really on the mend, Chairperson. I think it is cast products as well as grinding media, which are already on a profitability path. And the rest of SCOR is the one that is going through its early stage reconfiguration. But the entire SCOR group is on a good path, Chairperson. There are a couple of other social programs that we undertake, and we can provide a little bit of detail, but these are sort of non-lending, non-investment type activities that we do in order to support small enterprises and community-based type projects. These are undertaken under our CSI projects as well as the social enterprise programs. As you can see, not billions, but a couple of millions that get approved in various transactions in order to support largely community-based projects. My colleagues, we can provide a little bit of detail on these. Chairperson, at this point in time, please, with your permission, I have covered the development side, the financing activities, where money has gone in the various sectors, employment creation, empowerment, which sectors have been supported. At this point in time, I will ask my colleague, the CFO, to take the committee through the financial aspects of the IDC's performance. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honorable members. I will just talk you through a few slides on the financial performance that accompanies the developmental work that the IDC has done in the past financial year, as illustrated by the CEO. Starting with slide number 28, Chair, we give a summary of how the IDC funds itself to carry the activities that have just been highlighted a few minutes ago. In the disbursements that we achieved of over 11 billion rand in the past financial year, these were indeed achieved in spite of the current subdued economic conditions that we experienced in the past financial year. And we achieved these disbursements using our own funding model, which basically has got three pillars. We utilize our own internally generated funding, whereby on investments that we made a few years back that are now matured and beginning to pay us back, as well as giving us dividends where it is equity in nature, we utilize the dividends, the interest income, and any monies that we collect back from these entities to fund new activities that have happened in the past year. Secondly, Chair, there are some investments that over the period we realize that we can no longer add value and we are comfortable to exit them, and that money then comes in to also assist in funding new activities. Thirdly, we work very closely with the capital markets in raising money and borrowings, and hence the CEO spoke about the importance of the credit ratings and how they impact the borrowing requirements of the IDC. And that third pillar has also been part of our funding in the past financial year. We try and maintain strong liquidity to ensure that at any point in time there is no situation where we can't disburse money to the economy when it is required and due,
and we have not had challenges in that regard. Chair, in terms of the IDC Act, we are allowed to raise borrowings to the level of 100% of our equity levels. However, the board of the IDC took a decision a while back that to be prudent, let's not reach the 100% even though it is allowed. So we have kept the raising of money from capital markets to 60%, so we can only gear our balance sheet up to 60%. And we have maintained this over the period, and I will just share the numbers in a few minutes on where we are below that 60% threshold that the board has set. In the past financial year that we are giving feedback to the committee today, one of the significant elements that impacted our financials was a change in accounting reporting standards whereby the main standard that the financial services used is where you have to value your investments and make sure that when necessary you assess whether you will get your money back. So in 2019 we had to implement a standard that required that you make provisions for any impairments or money that you may not recover from your investments, looking forward and backwards, whilst in the past we only were able to only make provisions for the losses that we may have incurred already or provisions for impairments that we see in the here and now. But the standard changed and said you need to look forward to the end of your investment and make sure you make some provisions. That then, Chair, resulted in us having to increase significantly the required provisions that we had to make, which then impacted the financials of the IDC, and I will also show in some examples how that impacted us. We've seen as well in the past year, Chair, a strong growth in our reserves, and this is because we've got quite a significant number of investments that are in the commodity space, which did very well in the past financial year with prices rallying quite well, even though in the new year we've seen some of them pulling back a bit, which then talks to the kind of business that we are in as the market conditions do change. Chair, we continue to manage and contain our operating costs within inflation to ensure that we can pass the benefit in to the end users and those that we are serving. And in the past year, we did the same in that our operating costs, as in the IDC employees, we tried to live within the inflation levels. The CEO mentioned that SCORE has been one of the success stories after we got it from Anglo-American a few years back, and we see the impact as well of that turnaround in our financial performance. On slide 29, Chair, if I can just mention a few numbers. Our revenue is positive in that it grew by about 2% from what we achieved in 2018. We, even though our profit levels are down 14%, and I'll just give a few details on why the reduction, which talks to the changes in accounting standards as well as the economic conditions. As we continue to invest in the economy, our total asset base grew by 6%. We closed 2019 with a balance sheet worth about 145 billion rands. And this is also talking to some of our matured investments that have performed positively, resulting in our reserves growing by about 3%. On the same slide, 29, Chair, at the bottom boxes, this is to highlight the impact of the transition from the old standard, which was called International Accounting Standard Number 39, or IAS 39, to IFRS 9, which is International Financial Reporting Standard Number 9. As a requirement, we are having to make some provisions for the money we may not receive back. And for 2019, in terms of the old standard, we could have provided to the levels of about 18.8%. for the money that we may not get back in provisions. However, because we had to change to the new standard, we had to increase these provisions to about 26% of our investment book, and that then resulted in some of the performance, which means our balance sheet could have grown much better if we didn't have to make such significant provisions. Lastly, Chair, on this slide, I highlighted that the board has given us a threshold to raise monies from the capital markets up to 60%, but we are still at about 43%, which indicates that we can continue driving the economic activity through raising monies from the capital markets, which assists quite significantly in the IDC funding model. On slide 30, just to give a bit of a detail, we try to show the committee a three-year history of the IDC performance. So if we look at the total equity or total asset number, the committee can see that the IDC balance sheet has been growing steadily from the levels of 130 billion rands in 2017 to the 145 billion that we are in at the end of 2019. And yes, this has been driven by the level of investment that we've done in the economy, as well as the performance of many of our investments that have grown in value. However, if you go a little bit further down, Chair, we've got a line under statement of profit and loss that says operating loss or profit. And you can see that although we had shown positive numbers for the past 2 years, in 2019 we show a negative number of 497 million rands. So this is really driven by the fact that with the change in standard, we had to make quite high provisions, which then affected the performance of the year. And we are putting lots of efforts within the organization to work with the entities that are not performing well to turn them around. The examples that were made by the CEO on the work we are doing at Fosco, CIFA, and many others, where it would assist us to reverse some of the provisions that we have put through. Chair, that number of 497 million negative excludes the profits that we make as we exit some of the matured investments. What we do see is that as the IDC, because we do start up entities at cost and therefore the value is very low, as they grow and they mature, we realize quite significant values when we decide to exit. Hence, we show profits from capital exits in significant numbers. So at the bottom of that set of numbers, Chair, there's a line called capital profits, where over the period of 3 years, we exited some investments to reinvest on new investments, and those significant profits were part of the numbers we reported. But because of the change in accounting standards as well, we are now required that the capital profits that we make don't form part of the profit for the year if you look at our financial statements from 2019, whilst in the years before we were able to include them. And therefore, Chair, in the 2017 and 18 year, you see very big positive numbers because they include those profits. But in performance, we did more or less the same kind of things, and the numbers are fairly comparable. It's just that in disclosure requirements, in 2019, in the 720 million profits that we reported, we did not include the 2.3 billion profit that we made on exiting some of the investments. But if you were to include that, you will note that the performance is more or less at the same levels as the prior years. And therefore, when we go to 2020, the numbers will be much more comparable, as we will have reported in the same way for 2 years. Chair, the rest of the slides, 31, I will go quite quickly, but the intention there was also to do some analysis on our revenue, as we had to exit or report differently on SCORE. SCORE was a group of entities that were together. They were then corporatized and broken into three entities, and again there we've had to report differently and exclude some in the reporting process as required. And the intention there is really to do the analysis on how we reported previously and how we reported as we progressed in getting strategic equity partner to support us with a SCORE. On slide 32, Chair, again, we are doing a further analysis of our revenue line, in that as much as in 2018-19 it indicates a reduction, again, it's a disclosure issue that talks to the SCORE processes. But if you look at, Chair, that trend over the 5 years, 2018 and 19, the bright yellow and the green below, which talks to the dividends received as well as interest received, talks to the IDC activities as the funding entity, and you can see that there's been growth in the years, you know, all the way from 2016, as we have been able to see some activity and growth in many of our investments. And the rest that talks to manufacturing and mining income talks to most of our subsidiaries, SCORE, FORSCORE, that we consolidate as they are part of our group as the IDC. But as indicated, they've had some challenges in performance, hence the reduction in revenue in the manufacturing portion. Chairperson, on slide number 23, just to give a sense of our total book in the form of how much we have invested in loans and advances, which is about 28 billion at cost, and investments in terms of the equity, which is about 44 billion rands. We then have 55.8 billion, which is the growth in the investments that we've made over the years. And we talk about a strong balance sheet as a result of these investments that have actually shown growth in the balance sheet. But we use this to assist us with raising money from the capital markets, but when necessary, exit as well to raise financial support for new investments. We also, on the right-hand side, show a ring graph there, which highlights the fact that IDC, being a patient lender who supports startups over a period, it results in our funding being fairly long-term, and therefore about 30% of the money that we've given out is not expected back until about 5 years, as we allow these entities to stabilize before they can pay us back. Slide number 34, Chair, I will not spend time, but it is really an accounting slide which talks to how we moved from the old standard to the new standard and how we had to literally reshuffle the whole balance sheet to make sure it complies. And yes, we went through quite an intense process, but the auditors were happy that moving from the old standard to the new standard was appropriately done, and we did get an unqualified audit. But it is just to comply with the requirements in terms of how we measure and classify various elements of our financial statements. Slide number 35, Chair, highlights the impact that the economic conditions have on the IDC and the entities that we invest in. As you can see at the top of the right-hand side of that slide, there's quite a number of investments that we have to make provisions for the risk that we may not receive the money back, and therefore we have to impair. But also, in certain instances, we do write off investments, which means we may not get back that money at all. So it's not a provision now, it's a write-off. However, we have a legal team that continues to follow up with entities to make sure we recover in line with the agreements that we've put forward. So the 2.3 billion that we show as a write-off is really an indication of entities that have not made it. Some have had to go through liquidation, and people had to lose employment as a result of the challenges experienced by these entities. On slide number 36, Chair, it is just an analysis of our profit line. As I indicated, that if you look at the 2018 financial statements, it looks as though we made a total profit for the year of 3.2 billion for the year, whilst in 2019 it was 720 million rand. However, if you just break that the two numbers down, you will note that if you were to go back to 2018 and say, what was my profit before the capital gains that the standard has now said I must disclose differently, that profit is 841 million. And therefore, we had to show a comparative number that says in 2018, we made a profit excluding capital gains of 841 million, and in 2019, it was 720 million, which talks to the 14% drop in profit that I spoke about. But if you include then the profit line on both sides, you will note that in total, there was a total profit of over 3 billion in both years. Chair, the last two slides is just to give an indication of our funding program, where at the moment we have raised money from capital markets to the value of about 40 billion rands, and we do repay that money as it falls due, and there has not been any challenges or issues. A significant portion of it talks to the loans that we raise with commercial banks, and in certain instances, our international development finance institutions. We work with asset managers to raise bonds, as well as the unemployment insurance fund to support the funding requirements of the IDC. And lastly, Chair, we have a credit rating that is done by two rating agencies. One is Moody's, which also does the rating for the sovereign. So as they announced in the last few weeks that they were changing the outlook of the sovereign from stable to negative, we then had to change from stable to negative as well as the IDC, because we are linked to the sovereign in terms of the international or foreign currency. And for the local or national scale, we work with credit with global credit ratings, and there on in both cases we've got quite a good rating, which is AA+. And them looking at our financials, they have said they are still comfortable that we are a sustainable entity as the IDC. Chair, if I may end on that slide on the financials. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just in closing, hopefully about 2-3 minutes or so, if we take a snapshot of performance in the by to the end of quarter two in the current financial year 2019-20, where we are at this point in time, just to mention that many of these numbers are from our management accounts, and they still have to be reported to the board in full on the 28th of November. But yes, this is where we are. To date, approved just over 7 billion rand, which is spread across those industries as indicated there, Chairperson, on the left-hand side of the slide, that table showing value chains. Again, observing that the mining sector, as well as the chemicals, pharmaceutical sector, at this point in time, they seem to be leading the pack in terms of quantums of investments. Infrastructure is behind, and the agro sector also, year to date, really far behind, not satisfactory at all. But I do know that the teams, the investment teams, have just over 2 billion rand worth of transactions that are in the due diligence phase at the moment, and indeed between now and year end, I'm hoping that we make substantial strides in our support to the agri value chain. Chairperson, just some statistics there indicating employment creation and as well as jobs saved and so on. So this is just an overview really of the financing and investment activities as at the end of Q2 of the current financial year. Already some significant numbers advanced to entities that are women owned as well as under the Black Industrialist Program. Chairperson, to conclude really, if we take a five-year view of the IDC historical, this is what this organization has contributed to the South African economy, at least direct. About 71 billion rand or so in approved funding, of which 60 billion was indeed converted into actual disbursements, money is paid out. There is always a difference between approved amounts and disbursements, because you might have a situation where a project of 1 billion rand, for instance, is approved this year, but because it is implemented over a two-year period, perhaps a portion of the funding is disbursed this year, and then a portion of the funding is disbursed the year that follows. In certain instances, that could be as long as 3 years. I mean, in the construction of a power station, for instance, or the construction of a massive port or harbor complex. Chairperson, we remain very conscious of our mandate as an organization in terms of the contribution that we can make. We are a partner to government because there are a number of grant programs such as the Black Industrialist Program, the grant program for the textile industry and the steel industry, which are administered by the IDC. So we try and do a lot of blended financing work where we combine debt equity from the IDC as well as these grant programs that are allocated through the national budget system via the Department of Trade and Industry. So the challenges as we see them going forward really is our efforts to continue to make the IDC as much a developmentally effective organization as we possibly can, and while chairperson at the same time maintaining financial sustainability. I'm sure committee members will not want to see us here begging for bailouts and things like that. We are nowhere near such. The capital strength of the organization in terms of capital adequacy, as indicated by the CEO, CFO earlier, as well as the fact that we maintain prudential levels of borrowings. These two factors are key measures of our balance sheet strength. So we have to advance development finance on the one side. We have to maintain a financially viable organization at the same time. Chairperson, indeed, going forward, this is right the point that I've just made now, developmental effectiveness, financial sustainability, but also in continuing to look after and to professionalize the organization, the 850 or so people that work at the IDC, as well as improving our customer service practices. I think it is very easy for an organization such as ourselves at times to be a little complacent in terms of service quality, but we maintain vigilance as the executive team. And Chairperson, thank you very much. With your permission, if I may conclude there.
Let me just say from the committee side, we apologize up front because we needed to get more time. We have eaten it a bit when we had our minutes. So can I just ask that we then get the honorable members to take on comments, questions for clarity. I see the hands, Mulder, Tring, McPherson, Yako, Montasha, Mudau, Mbuyan. Okay, in that order. Mulder.
Thank you, Chair. I'll be short. Thank you for the report. Taking into consideration the economic climate, international, everything that impacts on the ability of the DTI to fulfill its mandate, and also and especially the situation in South Africa, the economy that we've got, I just want to know, everything has an impact and will most certainly have an impact on the DTI, especially a possible further downgrade. What I want to know is, what I don't know is, how many people are employed by the DTI, and as far as the operational cost is concerned, has it also declined, or is it, or is it more than in the previous financial year? And what will the DTI do if the running cost of the DTI is higher to actually take measures to get it into under control? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. I'll try to go through this as quickly as I can. Slide 9. Amounts approved for Black industrialists over the past 4 years totals 21.4 billion. Chair, my first question would be, what is the correlation between that kind of investment and an upturn in the economy? So how are we leveraging this investment, 21.4, the black industrialists, are we able to see a correlation between that particular investment and the growth in the economy? Interesting, I saw an article that was written by an economist which shows the inverse correlation with telecom and employment or unemployment, that when you see a decline in production of energy or decline in energy production, there's an increase in unemployment. So there's that correlation. What is the correlation with that particular investment and employment generally also within the country? Chair, on slide 12, with the spatial regional growth, when I was here in 2013, what we found was that, as you've indicated in the presentation, there seems to be an investment in your main sectors, your main industrial sectors, or the main provinces or regions, Gauteng, KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape. But we also have other regions that are really struggling with regards to huge unemployment rates, other provinces. 2013, when I was here for 6 months, the bulk of the investment seemed to have been going into Gauteng. While that may have been spread over some of the other regions, it is important to be able to identify how we're going to address the unemployment challenges in the other regions rather than taking it to the wealthier provinces all the time. Then on slide 17, the number of jobs created, saved, looking at your the black funding to black industrialists, funding to women entrepreneurs, and then funding to the youth entrepreneurs for 2019-2018, showing a decrease. You know, from 2018, 1,000 minus 30. Can you explain that? From 462, that's women entrepreneurs, minus 130. 163, 2018, youth entrepreneurs, minus 44. How do you explain that particular decrease in funding to those particular sectors? Then, Chair, on slide 19, is there, that's with regards to tourism, media, ICT, but I think in particular also across the board to all of the sectors where funding is actually given, is there a forward success monitoring system where we invest $1 billion in this particular entity? How do we ensure that the money that we're investing, we are monitoring that particular company, we are monitoring that particular sector to ensure that we're getting best value for money from our investment? So what is the forward monitoring system that we have in place to ensure success in that particular in the particular entities that we are investing? I suppose that ties in with the leveraging. When we leverage, and I'm looking now at CIFA and the other entities, CIFA, Fosco, and SCORE, how do we ensure that we're getting the best leverage from our investments? And it seems as if there have been some challenges. With CIFA, which is a small business, this is so key, Chair. Small business investment is so key because big businesses are actually downscaling and they're looking at retrenching. But small businesses always want to upscale. They're always looking, how can I grow my business? And so that means that these are the ones that are wanting to take on employment. But if we are struggling in this particular area with investments to CIFA, and we're struggling with what I'm hearing, some challenges with some of the boards and so on, it impacts on the potential for us to actually grow. So there needs to be mitigation with regards to ensuring that we don't invest where there are challenges, and where there are challenges, we look at sorting those out as quickly as possible.
You didn't count, Mr. Tring. So I will know how much longer you're going to take. You say the last one.
I'm almost done, Chief.
Before I finish,
it does
actually help, because that this is a bit.
All right. Let me maybe just say last two questions. Then I haven't counted, but last two questions. The CFO indicated that there are other entities, I'm looking at slide 27 when you're presenting the three-year group financial overview, you indicated that there were also other entities that were invested in that needed assistance with regards to turnaround plans and so on, so turnaround strategies. What are those other entities besides the ones that were mentioned? And then, Chair, let me stop here. Then, slide 32, 2018-2019, the write-off amount just for those 2 years, let alone the other 3 years prior to that, that's 5.3 billion write-off. And 5.3 billion is a significant amount. There's much that can be done with 5.3 billion. There are thousands of houses that could be built, hospitals that could be built, schools that could be built. So it's not a small amount. And I don't think that we should just kind of gloss over a write-off of 5.3. Now, I know that risk has to be taken. I understand that. But what has been done to ensure that those particular write-offs are minimal? Because those amounts, for me certainly, are huge amounts. Thank you.
Okay, Yako.
I think it was me next. Thank you very much. I certainly do understand and appreciate the important role that the IDC does play in industrial development, and that's why it's so important that it is done in a way that promotes investment, job creation, and is as scandal-free as possible. My personal view is that FOSCOR and SCOR are a waste of time, quite frankly. And I think that you will continue to put money and resources into those two operations, never to see a substantial return of any kind. And I think that what the discussion should actually rather be is around how do you limit those continued losses between either closing them down or finding buyers to take them in its entirety. CIFA is a tragedy in its own because it has such an important role to play, yet its corporate governance is shambolic, to say the least. And I really question or wonder what sort of effort is being put into CIFA's operation because, you know, I mean, I hear from businesses all the time that you can't get people to respond to queries, questions, and at what point does a noticeable difference in the operation of CIFA take place? Those are just some sort of general questions. On some more specific questions, I'd like to understand what is IDC's specific exposure to state-owned companies, if any? And if there is exposure to specific state-owned companies, please can those be listed as well as the values to that. I would also like to understand, in your impairments provisions, those have seemed to have increased quite rapidly over the last years. And while your write-offs as a percentage is around 5% or 6%, that is actually, you know, quite comparable with financial institutions, probably a bit more on the higher side, depending on the institution that you're looking at. But in essence, it's money that will never be seen in the system for new disbursements. And it's really on that basis that I question the type of write-offs that are taking place. Now, you will recall that I submitted a number of questions to you around politically exposed individuals that have received large amounts of money from the IDC for funding. And one of those particular individuals was Mr. Matthew Pauser, who is well known, and whose company, Dartingo Trading, received a loan of 115 million rand to the IDC in 2009. And that was used ostensibly to buy a share in a JSE-listed company, which then went into liquidation. And not a cent of that money has ever been paid back to the IDC. And as far as I can tell from the answers that you gave me, no legal action has ever been pursued against that company or any individuals. Now, the interesting part of that question was how you termed his involvement in that deal, and you said that it was an indirect shareholding. Now, indirect shareholding can be done in many ways, in that not necessarily the individual has a stake in the business, but a vehicle or business that they are involved in fact, has the shareholding. And that is how I believe you view indirect shareholding. But the fact of the matter is that those people or that individual has a case to answer as to how that deal went sour. But it also raises a serious flag as to how...
I will, when I know that you've gone after
sure.
4 minutes, five
sure.
minutes.
Okay, I'll be one or two more minutes.
Please.
And it still raises the question as to why you would have given 115 million rand to a company to buy a stake in a JSE-listed company that then went into liquidation. And it raises questions about your due diligence that you do. So with that being said, I would like to understand or get a document from you. What are all of your outstanding loans that you have written off over the last decade? And what exposure to politically exposed people does the IDC in fact have? And this is not something that the minister has himself objected to. In fact, he agrees that such a list should be made available, and I hope that you will do so as well. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you to the committee on IDC for your presentation. I appreciate it. I think I've been covered most of what I wanted to say, so I'm just going to maybe ask just a comment on four things. The first one, on slide 5, you say you contributed to women-owned companies, but I'd like to know what industries. Could you perhaps furnish us with information as to how many women-owned companies have you supported? Who are they, for how many years, and what is their performance for the last 5 years, if you could do that for me. Secondly, what informs, on your slide 12, I'd concur with Honourable Thring, what informs your funding versus job creation? Do you fund on a needs basis, or do you fund with the motivation of creating jobs? Because I would understand industrial development as the aim and main goal to create jobs and lasting and sustainable jobs. But I see that some of the funding amounts don't correlate with the jobs that are being created in those provinces. Thirdly, slide 27, I don't know if I did maths in high school, I mean accounting in high school, so my accounting may be accounting 101, but I'd like to understand total assets minus total liabilities should, it's always, I see across the 3 years it's been the same. So total assets and total liabilities almost cancels each other. So I don't understand, do you make a profit, do you make a loss? I don't understand if you can explain that specific graph for me. It just doesn't make sense to me, that one exactly. And lastly, the CEO spoke about ports in that industry, but I haven't much heard what you've spoken about. I don't know if it maybe it's part of the other industries, but the maritime space, how much are you contributing to that space? Which cities are you are benefiting from that contribution, and how many jobs are being created in that specific space? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. We arrive to appreciate the presentation by IDC Chairperson. From the very onset, Chairperson, I would beg to disagree with the Honourable McPherson when he says CIFA or FOSCO and SCO must be done away with by IDC. Looking at the dispersed amounts by CIFA towards rural women-owned enterprises and old and black-owned enterprises, because for us, we believe that, you know, transformation of the economic sector would thrive when those people that I've already mentioned have been, you know, lifted and been given an opportunity to participate in the mainstream economy. Chair, I can see the, I understand that Gauteng, Western Cape, Durban are economic nodes of the country, but that must not disadvantage the rural provinces. The Eastern Cape, for instance, has no mines. So IDC wouldn't contribute towards upliftment of those people. But the Eastern Cape has a wild coast that can be used and be funded, or development of that area be funded. We have the hole in the wall that the Eastern Cape intends to develop. I think IDC can be of assistance in that regard, Chairperson. Chair, can IDC tell us, report to this committee? Because we understand at some point the board instituted a forensic audit on FOSCO. Can they tell us that in detail and tell us what consequences were suffered by the people who did wrong, if there was any? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks, Chair. Let me welcome the presentation by IDC. I have only a few questions. One, CEO, page 38. Can I just get an explanation of the difference? Page 38. The difference between the approved funding and the dispersed one. Where do you allocate it when you close your financial year books? And then secondly, the visibility of your offices in the provinces. I think IDC must do something. Your provincial offices, they must make sure that they touch rural areas around the provinces just to make sure the community there, they understand ukuthi IDC iyini isebenzani. And then lastly, I still have a concern with the conditions of your loans and the requirements standard. I have a feeling that it's still not favoring black people. Thank you, Chair.
No, thank you, Chair. McPherson is contesting.
Chair, thank you very much. Mine are still on the issue of the 497 million. What are the cost of the losses here? The cost of the losses? And also the integration of CIFA and NEF. But in the fifth term, I've made to understand that there's a 500 million approved by the IDC to assist NEF in the process. I don't know where is the process, how far are you? Are you still going to dispatch all that money to NEF? Chair, how do companies and individual or entities access funding? And is there a specific limit or minimum or allowable or allowing? And what are the timelines? Monies that may not be recovered, can we be clarified? And why do we always just liquidate? But in the approved 7 billion, how much for the previous disadvantage? Because my person is contesting the black, then let us rephrase it to previous disadvantage individuals, not blacks, because there's a contestation there. Then, in terms of your organogram or your organizational structure, how many are you? How many previous, how many blacks are there in your managerial positions, women and stuff? Because we're talking finances here. So you must be able to know your staff complements in terms of managerial position and also just members on the, and also the gender parity. Because this managerial position must also be occupied by women and youth. And the disabled, yes. Yeah, so then maybe I'll pause there for now, Chairperson. But also a concern, where's my concern? In terms of the township and rural communities, that's a serious concern because now our focus as government to be dealing with inclusive growth and economic growth. Then if you concentrate on the Gauteng part, then what about this other outskirts of the provinces? I think on that one, really you need to clarify further. The issue of Foscot has been asked there by my colleague, but then maybe we'll get a clarity when you respond. Thank you very much, Chairperson.
Whip, you wanted to say something before? What's that?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson. I wanted to check about the issue of people living with disability funding. For why are they not represented?
I think obviously what we will have is that there will never be sufficient time to properly engage. We're trying to actually make an arrangement that works for us in a continued discussion as a committee. There might be question in terms of detail that we may not have sufficient time to run through all the detail. We're now supplementing the question as a point of being able to follow up on responses being in writing, but in terms of the session we're sitting on now, we think it should be interactive. We will actually allow you to actually speak to issues raised by the committee members. So as follow-up, because we do have our secretary, they try and pick up on the questions and be able to actually say same on the basis of the responses we're getting. We will ask you to engage our secretary to make sure that in writing we do actually have that feedback, because at least it gives a fair balance on the detail that we might have omitted, and maybe a point of being able to have accurate responses. So can I then hand over to you, IDC team?
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and we appreciate that guidance. Yes, indeed, I think there's maybe two or three items where we were going to request that we be granted the clemency to come back with a rather written up details. So, my colleagues, I hope we are ready. We can pick up on these matters that are here. Just statistically, how many people are employed in the IDC? It's somewhere in the region of 850 people. We have a head count approved approximately 900. But we do have a vacancy rate, so there's about 850 people so. With regards to the operating cost structure of the IDC, the CFO mentioned that the main cost driver, operating costs, is really the employment costs, people who work at the IDC, the professionals that we pay to do the various work. And the other costs are really of an administrative nature, say the cost of security services or the various offices that we rent and so on. We have consistently tried to contain the year-on-year increase of that cost line at around inflation rate, no more than 6.5% or so. Even the overall increases that were granted last year for staff members was an overall 5% increase for the staff members and less for the executives. So really that's I think what we can say on the OPEX, that we try and contain it within inflationary levels. We have our management accounts that we review on a monthly basis, and where there are variations, we take steps to pull back on operating expenses. And to the member, this is the IDC we are talking about. I remember, member, you kept on referring to the DTI, which is the department into which we report. I know that my colleague Mohammed is here, but they are not appearing today.
well, they say DTI run, you have to run far. Okay. Yeah, but I did pick up. Yeah.
So I think we don't have much concerns really on the costs, operating costs of the IDC. We will talk a little now in a short while about the, call them the credit costs, the losses that arise as we write off and impair transactions. That's where our concerns are, by and large. There's a very good question. I don't know if, David, you want to take this question on that correlation and so on. Are we sure that the investments that we make in the economy translate adequately to employment creation effects? I know that we are not the only player in the economy. In fact, Chairperson, through you, were talking about this the other day, and I was making a comment to say the IDC, as the CFO has indicated, is a 145 billion rand organization in asset terms. In aggregate, all the banks in South Africa sit in excess of 5 trillion. In assets. So if we're really looking for an uplift in the economy, the IDC alone will not be able to do it. You require development finance institutions, you require government spending, and you require private sector spending. I know I'm preaching to the converted because you do receive a lot of reports on matters like this. But David?
So Chair, if you recall, the CEO did highlight that the bulk of our funding goes to startups and expansions. So the focus of our activities really are in expanding industrial capacity within the economy. We do focus on job creation activities, but sometimes it's not directly within the company that we're supporting. So we will look also at the economy-wide benefits. So we might invest in something upstream, like a mine, on the understanding that that will create downstream opportunities for smaller business where other jobs will be created. So we look at the economy-wide effects. There was a question around the monitoring of the impact that we have. So we have a post-investment capacity that pays close attention to make sure that where we have, where companies that we partnered with have said they're going to create jobs, we follow up with them on a regular basis to make sure that they will create those jobs. We also monitor all the other development impacts. So, for example, we will require our business partners to be at a BEE level of 4. Sometimes when they come to us, they have a much lower BEE level. So we will partner with them to see how can we improve that BEE level. And again, we monitor that. We even provide support to say, how can you improve your BEE rating? So we do have a very strong post-investment function. It is probably worth mentioning to the members that the way that we measure our job performance, we don't look at jobs sustained. We're quite conservative and just manage. When we look at our jobs that we create, it's the direct jobs. We don't show the indirect jobs, and it's jobs which we haven't counted before. So we are quite conservative. We don't show jobs sustained. So that is just a bit around the jobs. Maybe just to also say, you know, if you look at the proportion of jobs, we did see in this last year a decline from the previous year in the overall approvals and the overall disbursements. So that obviously translates into less approvals across the various categories. But if we look at the proportion of funding, it's remained more or less the same. We have seen an improvement in our funding to black empowered companies. If you compare year on year, it's gone from about half of our overall funding to two-thirds of our funding to black empowered companies in the last year as a proportion. But a lot of the, when you look at rand for rand, it declined because of the drop in overall activity. Thank you, Chair.
The Chairperson, through you, the way it works is that there are economic models that we use to say in the tourism sector, for every 1 million rand invested, so much is estimated to be the job creation effects for pharmaceuticals, for mining. So when your disbursement figures drop, the corresponding job estimates also fall off. That's why this particular downward trend. Chairperson, the point about spatial equity, I think we hear the committee.
Sorry, Chair, can I just cut in there on the part of the coloration? Just want to know, are those job estimates or actual jobs created?
At the point at which we finance and sign the financing agreements with the enterprise that we are financing, they are estimated. But what we then do is that, let's say it's a new factory that is being built, our post-investment monitoring team would keep track of the jobs during the construction phase. And at a point where that factory comes into full production, we would go and audit to see the actual jobs on the ground versus what we estimated to be the job creation. As I say, at the point of making the investment decision, the job estimate, it is a job estimate based on this employment intensity factor. To say mining in platinum, based on historical economic analysis, has the following job creation effects. So there are estimates, but we reconcile them year on year to the actuals.
I'll just accommodate you, mm-hmm. And the follow-up questions, if question is answered, it's fine.
Chair, through
go
you.
Go ahead, yeah.
If perhaps we can also include it in that first question of mine of a written report on the structures of women that you're funding. Can you also please also include that report as to how you come about with the job estimates and also do you ever get a report of actual jobs created? Thank you.
Thank you. We will do, Chair, we do on an annual basis indeed, our customer base. They almost do a filing similar to what SARS, you know, like a filing of the employment creation. I just wanted to say, Chair, that, you know, the special equity question, the distribution of money and investments in those less developed provinces that are rural in nature, I think we really get the message here that as an organization, we need a concerted effort. We need a special initiative. Otherwise, if we continue to follow the market naturally as we have been doing, the natural attraction for more investment is driven from the main centers, Gauteng, Western Cape, KZN, and so on and so on. So I think it is a point that we cannot. The point that I would like to make, and maybe David can add a little later, is that each province has its own unique strengths. I mean, you go to the Free State, it's a largely agricultural province. The mining industry has since really disappeared in that environment. So if you're looking to intervene there, really it is about the agri and agro-processing sector and probably the new industrial development zones that have been designated both next to Harrismith as well as maybe in Botshabelo. And so I think we need to up our game, Chair. All I'm saying is I think we hear the message around this particular matter. We have explained the system of forward success monitoring. David touched on it very briefly. But what happens is this, the way the organization is designed, we have an investment team, the kind of people who go out, find the opportunities, evaluate the transactions, and make the investments. Then we have a separate team, which is called the post-investment management team. It's quite a sizable team. And that's all they do on a day-to-day basis to visit the projects, obtain financial information about performance, track industry performance, what's happening in the platinum industry or gold industry, and to try and respond timelessly to challenges that might be posed to these sectors. So we have very detailed portfolio report on a client-by-client basis. Who is in distress? Why are they having difficulties? Maybe they have experienced a downturn in their commodity prices, or maybe they have not managed their cash flows very well. So again, we can take that and reformat our presentation so that when we report, we also show portfolio monitoring. Chair, we will also report with a little bit more granularity on the leveraging, because indeed we recognize that the 11 or 12 billion or more that we might disperse into the economy in any given year doesn't shift the dial. The dial really gets shifted when, for every 1 rand that we invest, we have maybe mobilized another 1 rand from a grant program in government. That is why we administer the steel downstream facility, we administer the clothing and textile grant from government. Where we have not done well, Chairperson, is leveraging private sector enterprise funds. You know, the big companies, and all of them really do have, whether the food companies or mining companies, they have these enterprise development programs, and they are always looking for opportunities to support enterprises. We think we can do better in terms of originating those opportunities and leveraging the private sector. So my undertaking is that, yes, we are doing it largely between ourselves and government programs. We need to extend that to the private sector. Yes, we have made... Chairperson, I don't know, because CIFA falls under the Department of Small Business, and there seems to be a need here for a little bit more detail regarding CIFA's status or what is going on there. I don't know if... I don't know how parliamentary committees work, whether there could be a joint sitting between this committee and the Committee on Small Business in order to get finer insights into CIFA. That would be our recommendation. The information around entities that need a turnaround is quite a lot.
I have tried to regulate space, but I see members in their space, they don't want that order. So because I said no follow-up questions, but I still see hands. Buyane, can you be the last one?
In fact, Chair, it's not an order. In the report, there's a name CIFA here. So it's our right to check what is happening on CIFA. Cannot be told to have extended meetings and stuff for getting. We're asking based on the report, what is on the report. So we need an excessive explanation so that we are able to understand exactly what is happening. Because we cannot hear CIFA on corridors while there's CIFA on a document. When you get clarity, you must have other select committee on this one. I think that must be in order.
I think you do actually get open to suggestions as well. I thought what I understood the CEO to be saying, he was making a suggestion but not telling the committee what to do. But I think in terms of the suggestion, CEO, we think it's something we can consider. I understand what the member is saying. Yeah, so I'm just saying, Mbuya, siyavumelana namuhla. Ukuthi umbono obekayo, akasho ukuthi nizakwenza le nto ayishoyo. Okay, can we actually then proceed, CEO?
Quickly, Chair. I think on the details regarding the portfolio of companies that are in turnaround as well as the significant 5.3 billion rand of write-offs, if we could please be, Chairperson, with your permission, be afforded the opportunity again to submit a supplementary document that provides that detail. What we do agree with, and our board, as well as the minister responsible for this entity has, is cognizant of, is that that level of credit losses is heavy. It's substantial. So we need to manage our credit practices better and our investments. A point was made about Fosco and Score Metal. I think, Chairperson, I can just repeat the point I made, and that is that we are absolutely convinced that Score, having restructured it and broken it into three pieces now and invited strategic equity partners with the capital that they have invested and their international industry value chains, those entities are on a mend. I mentioned that two of them are already on a profitability path. We have serious challenges as far as Fosco is concerned. It is not yet on a safe recovery trajectory.
I was going to wait to hear whether I'm covered, because hearing, and it sounds like this is historic, that they don't make a profit. So if it is that there are measures in place, can we then in a written reply maybe just get that plan with timelines so that we as a committee also monitor this entity of the IDC?
Exactly, Chairperson. That's we would like, please, to be afforded that opportunity. Thank you. And then, again, our exposures to SOEs, the Industrial Development Corporation is primarily a private sector financier. Yes, we do have exposures to some SOEs. The one that comes to mind now is when Broadband InfraCo was formed, we did invest. We don't have exposure to Transnet. We don't have exposure to Eskom. We don't have exposure to SAA or any one of those. I mean, the closest we come to Eskom, for instance, Chairperson, is where we have financed the independent power projects which then supply power to Eskom through their purchase power agreements. But we don't have direct exposures there. But again, if we are afforded the opportunity, we will itemize all of them. There are not many, as I mentioned. Yes, the observation that is made around the levels of provisioning and the extent to which we effect actual write-offs. Again, Chairperson, that observation is well made. Even our auditors themselves have advised us that we should relook that policy so that we don't under account for losses. We make adequate provisions, but perhaps maybe we don't write off transactions that have really gone under as much as we should. So that's a point well made, and it is being attended to. A request has been made that all loans made to politically exposed people, the list and so on. Chairperson, you may recall that the IDC on an annual basis in its annual report does provide a full list of all enterprises that it has funded where there are individuals that are classified by law as politically exposed people or politically influential people. If the request is that we should go a couple of years back and provide that information, we don't have it now, we are happy to do so, Chairperson. Hopefully the committee gives us adequate time to do so. The same really, Yako, the details relating to women, we have the aggregate numbers here. What you asked for is where are they, especially in which industries, and so on and so on and so on. And I think we will be very capable of providing that detail because it is available. Your question around the maritime industry, can we ask it? Answer it in short, David. We don't have much of an involvement in the oceans economy, maritime industry, and all that. There is a very interesting transaction that we are looking at the moment, Chairperson. It is, without going into the details, it's an industry to recycle and reprocess scrap metal from the vessels that have run out of their useful life. And very often they float at sea forever. They end up, washing off at the coastlines and whatever. So there is a very interesting technology that has been developed and so on. So, but yes, I'm happy to take this one as a challenge. We really, recalling the strategic framework of the IDC, it is not an area that we have done much in. And Memandashi, the point about special equity has been made really addressing. And by the way, and again, we should not say make promises that we can't fulfill. But there is a team at the IDC at the moment that is working with the Department of Tourism on that hole-in-one project. It is very early stages. We have allocated 5 million rand to complete the feasibility study around it. And again, we can probably send it as an update report to the committee just to... And then, Chairperson, with your permission, if you allow me, the forensic work that has been done around Fosco, again, can we prepare that in the form of a comprehensive report that summarizes the report? I won't be able to remember everything now as I sit here. Safe to say that because Fosco is a subsidiary of the IDC board commissioned that forensic investigation. It has since been completed and a report was delivered, and the board of Fosco is acting on the recommendations of that. But please, Chairperson, if I may request that we come with a formal document around it.
Yeah, I do actually pick up as an issue.